You knew I was going to talk about Jaden Daniels. Look at you. You're just like every other baseball team over the weekend. Everybody else just leaning in when it's light in social media content right now. Jaden Daniels is everybody's butt. He's the butt of everybody's joke. The five jokes are everywhere.
They're funny, though. Come on.
It is. They're all hilarious. They're insanely funny. And this is where social media is great, even though it becomes monotonous and people start to just copy each other. This is when you see the creativity of some, though. And when there is a trending joke, everybody's going to jump in on it. And that has been Jaden Daniels for the last few days now. And look, I understand there's people that want to come to his defense. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy. Doesn't mean that he's, you know, a bad leader or bad anything. We've had nothing bad to say about him. But this, even if it was a tiny little bit of his decision and mostly handled by the people around him, it's a bad look. And when people got mad at me for saying this was a bad look and a red flag given his situation and the people around him making decisions, it's a bad look. And this is why. Because your brand matters, your reputation matters, especially as a quarterback. Like, yes, if there's never any conversation about this again and he wins two Super Bowls, is anybody going to care? No. But that's the thing. You don't know that. And now more than ever, your individual brand, your image as an athlete, as a person, if you care, it matters. And when you have family around you helping with business decisions, it gets emotional. And that's natural, right? Family cares about you. So, of course, they're going to have a little bit of a bias in certain situations where they feel, because they care about you and they're proud of your career and the things you've accomplished in college and at LSU, they see it as disrespect because they are Team Jaden. LSU is Team LSU. So you're going to have a disconnect that's already there. The problem is that when you have people that are emotionally connected to the person that they're representing in any way, it's going to change the decision. It's going to cloud decision-making. Even if it's a little bit, it's going to happen. Like, this should have never been something that was public. It just isn't. And, you know, look, again, we could sit here and say all day we don't know all the conversations that were had behind the scenes. Fine, we've had enough people come out now and talk about the way that this is handled to where, yeah, Joe Burrow was told his number 9 wouldn't be given out, but there's also, you know, people that have talked about the program essentially saying behind the scenes, like, for anybody, if there's a top recruit that really wants a number 9 or another number, they're going to have a conversation about it. Because in the end, you have great players that wear numbers in college football that all the time don't have it retired. It's rare that numbers are retired in college football. And it's like, one, it's just hard to do that. You start doing that a lot, you have no numbers left. You got like 100 guys on these rosters. They double it up on offense and defense, right? Like, so there's just even that aspect of it. But, you know, in the end, that player's legacy will never be changed. Jaden's legacy at LSU is not going to be changed. Joe Burrow's legacy is not going to be changed if someone else wears the number 9. It doesn't erase history.
I'll tell you, one of those guys is more popular than the other in Baton Rouge right now, though.
You are seeing so much Jaden Daniels venom from that fan base, that alumni base, and so much love for Joe Burrow. And Leonard Fournette was actually interviewed recently, too, and was asked about the retiring of the number 5. And he said, hell no, because you haven't retired number 9 yet. Like, that's how Joe Burrow was viewed there. He did win a national championship. They both won Heismans, but Joe Burrow won a national championship. And that was a really good team. That LSU team that Joe Burrow was on that won the national championship was one of the best we've ever seen in college football. So there is just a different feeling towards Joe Burrow and what he means to that program. And it doesn't mean that Jaden Daniels didn't have an incredible career there. And he didn't have a great legacy. But now, like, you go back and look, when he left Arizona State, I mean, there's that video that circulated of, and again, it can be a small group of people, but like, for that to still be a thing, for people to sit there and make a video and make fun of him that he's leaving and saying, we don't want you anyway, and like, for anybody to feel that that's like okay to do is still a red flag. And now it looks like Jaden Daniels has completely alienated the second school that he played for. And that's like, that is a red flag, and it may not be on him, but it's still on his overall situation and the people that are around him. And if they're making decisions that are emotional like this, like, I'm sorry, you're going to have to get that in check because it's going to hurt his career. It's going to hurt his image. He can be a great leader. He can be a high IQ football player and a great person and all these things. But you don't want to be micromanaged by your family. You don't want to be micromanaged by an agent, by a manager, by a lawyer. Same thing with family. And if they're handling your business, that adds another layer to it that's going to also turn some people away. Like, are there going to be people out there, if this becomes a continued reputation, because again, this can fizzle and go away over time, but it isn't right now. It's still a huge deal. But there are going to be people that might be less inclined to do business with Jaden Daniels and his team because of situations like this, because this is what's public. It makes you question what other types of bridges were burned or animosity towards certain people or things that got too personal behind the scenes and where that could be. Now, we don't know, but that type of thought alone is what's going to make people be hesitant at times. That's just how this stuff works. So, yeah, everybody's jumping on him, and this maybe, if anything, could just be a learning experience for everybody involved. Hey, we handled this wrong. And they don't have... It's not, I mean, yes, they've got lawyers and people that represent with him too, you know, represent him too, but again, he's got his mom involved with it. And that's awesome. Like, she loves her son. She wants him to be successful. That's great. But there is a line, and you have to be real careful. It's a lot harder when family's involved and there's an actual emotion towards the person you care about. Like, that's just natural. That's there's nothing wrong with that. It's the business part of it where it creeps in, and that's where it becomes a problem. But you know how you make it go away? You win football games, and then no one's really going to care. The legacy will be far greater if he can win a Super Bowl than if he had even won a national championship at LSU. You win a Super Bowl in Washington, ain't nobody going to care. They're not going to.
Not in this town.
Not in this town. No, no one's going to care. But we've also seen other athletes have family involved in their representation, and it's a problem. I mean, it happens in Baltimore. And yeah, Lamar Jackson got paid, but I know I've talked to some people behind the scenes. There have been endorsements and stuff that have been turned down, and it wasn't really his decision to turn endorsements down. And that's, you know, there's underlying family.
I mean, you can't take every endorsement either. You got to turn some down. So who knows
maybe,
why or whatever.
Maybe. But it's a different element when family represents you. It is just an emotional connection that you can't help. And that's good. But it's tough when you're in these types of business decisions. Now, in terms of what we're actually going to see from Jaden Daniels on the field against Detroit, that's certainly up in the air. Marcus Mariota is going to be out with the sprained MCL for the rest of the preseason. So the question now becomes, is that going to be more or less of Jaden Daniels in that second preseason game? Here was Dan Quinn on that.
Yeah, I definitely thinking, you know, that was like a question on the top of my head, and I was staying in the block this week really before we get into the preparation for that as far as the game goes. So not right now, it doesn't, Nikki. I recognize the question for sure, but right now we're kind of going into like these 2 days as still like a training camp mode. That'll be like Tuesday and Wednesday and big pad of stuff. So as far as like how much and starters and what we do, some of it will depend on what I'm seeing on Tuesday and Wednesday. So we got a bunch of situations that I'm trying to work through, 2 minutes, 4 minutes, you know, some goal line stuff. So this is kind of like our most heightened training camp block coming up. So I'm excited to see that. But we haven't got in terms of like planning of the game yet of that part.
Dan Quinn's such a cordial guy, isn't he? He's got to be the best coach with the media. Metal Chris, when you listen to him like address people by name, and it's just so enthusiastic. I hear your question, and yes, I it's just going to take some time, and we're going to go through this. He gives these thoughtful answers, and it's like it's almost like he's a politician, but like a genuine politician, right? Most politicians are liars, and we all know that. But there's a few out there that actually mean what they say. I feel like Dan Quinn comes across as like one of those politicians that actually wants to be a good dude and do the right thing and all that. Like, when I listen to him talk, I just hear somebody that's just so cordial. You're like, oh, yeah. Every time I hear him talk, I go, oh, that's why players like him. That makes a lot of sense.
You think he's the best? Because I was like, Dan Campbell's kind of fun at the podium.
Yeah, but he's different. He's much more, oh, yeah. He just loves everybody, man. You know, I just love my players, man. He's different. He's much more emotional.
Yeah, he's got like a bit of a pro wrestler vibe to him.
Yeah, I could hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of it there. Dan Quinn's much more of like it's almost like he's been coached up and really practiced how to be, you know, how to answer questions and be at the podium and have success in that.
Well, he doesn't seem tense at the podium. I mean, some of those guys are like Belichick, and we're like, some of these guys just always seemed real tense. And yes. I'm not just talking about after a loss. Like, Some of those guys just—they're just like, "Oh crap, I got to deal with the media."
Oh yeah, oh
like,
yeah.
You know, and you can just like see in their faces, like, "How soon can I get this over?" Like gritting their teeth the whole time. And he just seems kind of like, laid back, like, "All right, let's get this over. Let's do this thing. What you want to ask? What you got?" You know?
Yeah, it's like Dan Quinn enjoys the moment. He enjoys being the leader up there. Like he embraces being a visual and vocal leader. And Bill Belichick was much more. Well, it was also an act a little bit too, because players would tell you. Well, it wasn't an act. He didn't like talking to the media. But
I mean, there's definitely some coaches that have their, like, you know, how you think they are. And then if you hear from people on the team, they're like, "Oh, yeah, that guy's, like, way different." You know?
Right. Well, that's what they say about Bill Belichick. I mean, we've seen now he's come out of his shell a little bit when he did TV before he went to North Carolina. I mean, now, you know, this is like, I mean, the North Carolina situation with Bill Belichick is a whole other animal. But, you know, we saw it when he would actually do TV. You're like, "Oh, he's like, he's monotone, but he's funny. He's snarky." There's a likability that's there. It's a personality we never saw when Belichick was coaching the Patriots.
Yeah.
And we're on to Cincinnati. And he, like, but that was all planned.
He's like, dating a lady 40 years or whatever younger. He might lighten up a little too.
Got a little, he felt more youthful, didn't he? Felt a little more youthful after he's dating somebody a third of his age. And you know what? I think a lot of guys his age do the same thing. Yeah, I think, you know, there's something to be said for that there. I think that probably helps just a little bit, and he's not the first and he's not the last to do something like that, I think. So it's very obvious that that's the case. But yeah, man, Dan Quinn just comes across as a dude that people, I mean, they like. And I know I joke a little bit about the player report cards, but like, what did he get, an A+, whatever it was? Like, players love him. Now, that's not always a good thing. You got to win games if you're a player's coach, but the team's not winning and there's no discipline. I mean, that's the problem. But if you're a good coach and a great leader, but you treat players with respect, they will in turn respect you. And the culture you're trying to build, if you're building the right culture, it will translate and it will come together. And that's really the difference, is they've got to be able to do that. And you saw it the first year. You didn't see it last year. Although I'd argue the culture was still there in some respects, because at the end of the season, the team didn't mail it in. You had guys out there trying at the end of the season. Didn't help. Could have had a higher draft pick, but they got Sonny Styles. So, you know, feel good about that still. But, I mean, yeah, that's when you have a leadership quality or qualities that are respected by players, it will help. It will make you more successful as a coach and as a team. Now, there's obviously a trickle-down effect. You've got to have coordinators doing their job. You've got two rookie coordinators on this team. So Dan Quinn obviously believes in them. And look, this team's risk takers as a whole, if you really think about it. You got offensive coordinator that's a rookie, defensive coordinator that's a rookie. You got a center that hasn't really played center before, at least on a full-time basis. You start off with that, and it's like, those are three big risks already. Those are major risks for this team. And they don't care. And I'm sure that's Dan Quinn and his confidence. "Oh, we'll get this. You know, everything's going to be fine. You know, don't worry." And thank you for bringing that up, Metal Chris, because, you know, we're really focused on just the talent that we have. And, you know, the coaching staff we have, they're very smart and they've learned. Like, you get those kind of answers. And I guarantee you that's actually what he believes. And that stuff's contagious, though. I mean, that is very contagious when you're a coach that leads in that way. And it's kind of what you have to do, because coordinators are massively undervalued until you realize you need a good coordinator. Similar to kickers, really. I mean, look at the Lions. The Lions lost their offensive and defensive coordinator, and they went 8-9. I mean, it was a big difference. That offense was not the same for the Lions. And that's just like, head coaches kind of have to be delegators to a point in the NFL. Your coordinators need to be on the same page as you, and they need to be good coordinators. And at some point, I mean, look at the Bucs and look at Baker Mayfield. They kept losing offensive coordinators to head coaching jobs, and they had success for a stretch, and then it finally didn't work anymore. And they had to figure it out and revamp things again. And, you know, that's, coordinators matter. We don't give offensive and defensive coordinators enough credit until they're removed, and it's like, "Oh yeah, they were really good."
They get credit when they're doing bad.
They definitely, if they're not a good coordinator, you have a target on your back. If you're good, people just expect more. Or it's the head coach. So it's a tough spot to be in. That's why most of these guys want to be head coaches. But some aren't, and that's okay. You could be a really good offensive. I mean, Josh McDaniels is not a good head coach. We've seen it twice now. He's really bad, but he's a great offensive coordinator. And he could be the offensive coordinator for the Patriots for the rest of his career and have a lot of success. And he's found his spot. I don't think Mike McDaniel is going to be a great head coach. I know he had his moments early on with the Dolphins, but let's be real. It was a dynamic offense, and it snuck up on everybody. He put up 70 on the Broncos that first year. I mean, like, that's what it told you. But he's just not, I just don't think he's a head coach. He's funny. He's a cool guy, but he's also just, like, wacky. It like just doesn't have that. Like, it's not a leadership quality as much as it's just like a guy you want to hang out with quality. And it's just different. But in the end, you got to win games, and that's what matters the most. Nick Cashew on the Fan. One good thing for the Commanders, even if you've seen your backup quarterback get hurt and miss the rest of the preseason, they don't have a quarterback battle this year, quarterback controversy, whatever you want to call it. Nick Cashew on the Fan. I watch some of these other teams, and they're trying to figure out what their quarterback situation is, and it's like, oh, God, I remember that. at least it's not that. You know what? I don't even care if Jaden Daniels is getting made fun of by everybody with the number 5 in some way or another. I'd rather have that and have a franchise quarterback, which, again, still needs to show that moving forward, obviously. I'd rather have that than, you know, where the Vikings are, where J.J. McCarthy, who was drafted in the same draft, in the same round as Jaden Daniels, and he's already been demoted to a backup. And he's barely been on the field, hurt his entire rookie year, hurt a lot last year. Really didn't look like a starting quarterback. And that was one of the easiest calls for me. I was like, oh, Kyler Murray's going to win the starting job in Minnesota. There's a guarantee that it's going to be the case. But, you know, there's reports that J.J. McCarthy likely wants out, and he says he's happy there. And you're going to get a lot of this stuff there, but that's the type of thing that this Commanders team at least does not have to deal with.
Do you think J.J. could be a possible replacement for Mariota if Mariota were to, say, be more seriously injured than he had been, or...
I doubt it. No, because I wouldn't even know what like the Vikings would want. Like if they were seriously,
I mean, he's not a starter. You can't,
right?
You know,
but like if Kyler Murray got hurt, which there is a chance that he gets hurt, he does have an injury history. Then J.J. McCarthy's your guy that you at least hope still has some potential left. Like trading away young quarterbacks that you drafted that are still on their rookie deal, they got to be really.
I mean, they traded up to get him, I think, right?
No, they were in that spot, weren't they?
Maybe they were. No, I don't remember now. It's been a couple years.
Well, like, think of Anthony Richardson right now. Nobody even wants to trade for him. Like, yeah. He's been on the trade block, and no team wants him.
I know.
And look, I'm not saying Anthony
Richardson. Until someone gets injured, then people start looking.
Right, but I mean, he's basically the third. I mean, he's the third string quarterback now in Indy. And he was never ready to start from the beginning. That's on the Colts also, starting him too soon. He really should have sat out 2 years. He shouldn't have been a first round pick. That's the thing. Like, quarterbacks get overdrafted all the time. All the time.
I mean, you're drafting on potential, not actual skill level currently. So,
But what bothers me about that is that when you draft somebody on potential, which you're right, it happens a lot, but then you throw them to the wolves right away, if it's on potential and not currently where they are, then you're throwing them to the wolves where they're not ready and you're expecting them to perform. And then when they don't, then it becomes a humiliation where they're benched or they're getting criticized or they have to answer questions after games or they're in their own head because they're used to succeeding and then they're not. Like,
I feel like you've followed a football team that's done this for many decades.
It's almost like I've seen this before. Yeah. There's a team that's done it quite a few times over the years. And yeah, I mean, look, it's a little different in Atlanta. I thought Tua would pull that job away from Michael Penix Jr., but that may actually not be the case. Tua wasn't very good in their preseason opener. But, you know, again, preseason, small sample size, it's not very much. But I mean, even if you're the Falcons, Michael Penix Jr. now, another knee injury. He had so many injuries in college. Like, you need somebody there that's a quality backup. But some of these quarterbacks that just have dealt with injuries throughout their careers, like that's really what sets them back, and it's not the talent. And it can lower the ceiling with anybody. And that's why there's so much concern about Jaden staying healthy this year, because, you know, like Jordan Tyson, the wide receiver out of USC that just got drafted by the Saints, just found out he's going to miss 2 months with a hamstring injury. 2 months! And he had an injury history all through college. A lot of times when guys have an injury history, it stays. It's very rare that you get the Steph Currys that have nothing but ankle problems early in their career, and then all of a sudden they're able to remedy it. It's hard. And sometimes it's just your body doesn't hold up with the rigors of an NFL season. It's insanely difficult to deal with. And, you know, there's talented quarterbacks that do not get enough of an opportunity because they just can't stay on the field. Because think about this. If you're J.J. McCarthy, Your rookie year, you're hurt. So you're rehabbing. You're not going through full development with Sam Darnold as the starter, which would have been a great situation. Then Sam Darnold's gone, goes to Seattle. You're named the starter your second season. You're hurt at the beginning of the year. You're hurt again in the middle of the season. You don't look good. You get benched. You're in. You're out. They're cycling through quarterbacks. And that's the first 2 years. Meanwhile, Sam Darnold leaves and goes and wins a Super Bowl in Seattle. That's not an easy position to be put in. And listen, I credit somebody like Kevin O'Connell, who has said before, like when he got there, when they develop a young quarterback, they weren't going to rush them. And I don't think they were going to start J.J. McCarthy anyway his rookie year, but Sam Darnold earned that job to begin with and was at least on the way to that before J.J. McCarthy got hurt. He got hurt kind of early in camp, but still, you kind of knew like Sam Darnold had a shot, and it worked. Like, I mean, he was successful, but you can't rush these quarterbacks, and I get it. It's tempting. It's this rookie contract and your team. If you draft a quarterback in the first round, I mean, you draft them because you need a quarterback, unless you're the Rams, right? And I know Ty Simpson looked good, but remember, he played against, like, third-string guys. It was the second half of a game. He looked good. He did what he was supposed to do, but he was going up against guys that he saw in college. So, you know, again, it's why you want to temper expectations in the preseason, just like you want to temper expectations in NBA Summer League. It's very similar in that sense. But, you know, you when you're J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix Jr., they've missed a lot of time already because of injuries, but so has Jaden Daniels. Like, let's not sit here and pretend that that hasn't been the case. Jaden missed essentially an entire season of development last year. An entire season. And even when he was out there, he didn't look right. Right? Like, he just didn't look like himself. He wasn't physically where he needed to be. And you're just behind the entire time. And he didn't have weapons around him. And it was just a lost season from, like, I mean, really the very, very beginning. And, you know, it's why protection of a quarterback matters, but some of it, too, is just training staff. You got to have smart doctors that understand how to prevent injuries, and not all of them are preventable. We understand that. Not all of them are, but you want to at least try to maximize your odds to work in your favor so you've got a quarterback that you can count on week in and week out, because Jaden healthy, we know what he can be. Jaden hurt means we're going to Marcus Mariota. And that's why it was so important that Marcus Mariota was healthy for the regular season just in case. Because we make fun of all these guys until you need them all of a sudden. Kickers and backup quarterbacks all the time. Then you need a 60-yarder kicked, or you need a backup quarterback to go out there and win you games.
And if we could find a guy that does both.
I mean, the NFL used to be that way. If we could go back to that, some multitaskers, that would be great. You'd save roster spots.
I mean, Joe Gibbs used to always have the guys that would hold the extra points and the field goals or whatever be backup quarterbacks, I remember. Because if they wanted to run fakes, the guy knew how to throw.
Well, that used to be the case for a lot of teams in the NFL. Because remember Tony Romo, when he got named the starter, but he was still holding kicks. And it was a playoff game? It was the end of the regular season, that late December game where he fumbled the snap on a field goal. And he was still the holder, but he was a starting quarterback, whatever that was. It was his first year with Dallas, like actually starting for them.
Yeah.
But then you don't yeah, it's all punters now that hold. You don't ever see kickers, or you don't ever see
backup quarterbacks. Well, they don't really run fakes anymore either. It's very rare. Maybe in college, but not in the pros.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I've seen any team have their backup quarterback hold anymore. That used to be the thing, and it's just not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they used to just run the boot. They have the kicker run out, and you have the guy throw it to him, you know?
It kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know? I feel like it makes more sense than having the punter do it if you do decide you want it. Because that's the thing. If you decide you want a fake, and you suddenly have your backup quarterback out there holding, it's like, oh, there's a red flag. I think we got something coming here. There's your sign. But yeah, you definitely do not see that very much anymore. But as long as Marcus Mariota is healthy, we never see him on the field. All those things are good. That is what we're asking for. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Oh, we got some drama brewing in the NBA. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Metal Chris, have you ever watched the show Succession?
Nope.
Okay. It's a great show.
I'm not a huge TV guy, just in general.
No? Okay.
I mean, I watch sports on TV.
Okay.
I'll probably watch like a Star Wars show here or there, maybe some Marvel stuff, but I generally don't watch a ton of TV.
It's basically a show with, you know, a family, and their dad owns media companies, and then the whole show is them basically fighting on who's going to take over control once he's done. There's more to it than that, but that's basically it. So the Lakers were just sold. After just being sold again.
Yep.
They got sold for $12.5 billion. Well, the drama has suddenly gotten worse over the last couple of hours or so here. So Jeannie Buss is now contesting her siblings' vote to sell the family's remaining 17.8% share of the Lakers. So the Lakers got sold, But the Buss family still had their stake, 17.8% for the family. But she was overruled by the rest of her siblings who voted to sell the rest of it when she wanted to keep it. She was going to stay the team's controlling owner through 2030 originally. But now, and that was an ominous quote that I think it was Bob Iger who told the California Post that he intended to honor the agreement with Jeanie Buss staying as the owner at least through 2030, like the acting owner essentially, but added, quote, if something changes, then it changes. And shortly after that,
If she dies, he dies.
Shortly after that, the rest of her brothers voted to sell the rest of the shares, which puts her out, and now she's going to fight it. This is...
I love it when billionaires throw money at each other.
Oh, this is so great. And do you remember, and again, I know you said you're not a TV guy, but maybe you'll at least remember, there were like a couple of Lakers shows that were out for a while, right? It was like they called it Winning Time. They couldn't call it Showtime, but it was on HBO, and it was a show about the Showtime Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, I never saw it, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's about the Showtime Lakers, and Jeanie Buss wasn't happy with how the team was portrayed in that history of, you know, Jerry Buss and everybody there. So they ended up having their own like documentary that was out on the team. Of course, they painted it in their own light. And then there's a show on Netflix. I've watched some episodes. It's whatever. But it's basically like a fake Lakers team, and it's kind of the same family drama. Like, it's very clear it's Lakers and Clippers, and you can tell what they're doing without actually using the real team names. But all of these just show the drama between like all of the Buss siblings and how they've just been a part of this forever. But Jeanie Buss has always wanted to be somebody that was in charge and run the show, and like this mattered to her. And in everything you see, it's like the rest of the brothers, it's like hit or miss. Like, yeah, you kind of care, but you don't really care. They're used to having family money, and now they've sold the rest of it, and she wants to fight it. LeBron has got to be looking around going, I am so glad I got out of that S show.
Yeah, I was like, the Lakers got more drama after he left, which is not normal. But
not normal at all. Maybe he was actually holding them together. We give a lot of crap to LeBron, but maybe he actually was the glue there.
I wonder if he sniffed something was going on with the sale, and then he wanted to get out of there.
He might have. I mean, remember, Magic Johnson bailed like out of the blue a few years ago from their front office, so he knew there was stuff kind of going on. I mean, it's always been a drama-filled organization.
Do we know? I know we've all heard it's like the Kushners and the Bob Iger. Do we know who the controlling share of those two is?
I have not
seen.
They
can't both be team president or whatever.
Yeah, I have not seen who has more of a share. I mean, I would guess Kushner over Bob Iger. Bob Iger had, certainly success running Disney, but like to be a part of a $12.5 billion purchase of the Lakers, I mean, that's a lot. Like
These people have more wealth than I can really fathom. So I don't know.
Yeah, but there's different levels. You know what I mean? I know. So all I know is this: it is what you would expect from this. Like the Lakers, there's certain organizations that just always have this, right? The Lakers are one. The Cowboys are another, and there's certain organizations that have it's either like family drama involved with the ownership, or it's, you know, just drama with star players. It just becomes more than about the sport, right? It's more about what they're doing. Not normal contract negotiations. Those all happen. But it's always just becomes
Lakers are kind of a circus.
Yeah, I mean, they really are. And people don't talk about it as much because they've had so much success and they're such an iconic franchise. But, like, let's be honest with ourselves. They're kind of a mess. And there's family drama there all the time between all of them. And now we got Jeanie Buss like, no, I still want my share. I still want to be part owner. I don't think there's anything she could do about it. There's a clause in the contract that basically they called it it's basically called a tag-along clause. And you can tag along with a sale that's being made and they can sell the rest of their, you know, the Buss, you know, minority stake in the Lakers, and that's what the rest of the siblings want to do, and she doesn't want to do it. And she might just be out, and there's nothing else you can do about it. Now, granted,
she's going to have a lot of money to count.
That's the thing. Like, you're still going to be super rich, but it's beyond that for her, right? Like, that it's a family business, and she's been in charge of this in some capacity since she was, like, in her 20s.
You know, and owning sports teams is a club. There's only so many of them, you know.
No, I'm with you.
There's only so many of them, so.
Wouldn't that be funny if she bought a minority stake in the Clippers?
Oh, God.
Let's just go right across
town. I mean, Ballmer's got money.
No, he does. Ballmer's got a lot of money. So I don't even think that would be the case. Well, what's going to happen is she'll probably buy into, like, the new Vegas team.
So what she should do is just set up some fake you know, shell companies that they can funnel money into Luka or whoever else on the Lakers.
There you go. What are you saying? Like
get
the Clippers
the cap,
did?
Right?
Hey, there's a report out there that the NBA doesn't have enough evidence to prove that.
I mean,
so
she's no longer associated with the Lakers. So,
right.
Yeah.
That is true. Well, technically, I think it's a little bit longer. This is crazy.
No,
though,
I know.
Man.
I'm just.
No, I don't.
At some point, that's, you know, that will be the argument. But I don't think that's what she'll be doing anyway.
She's the only sibling that did not want to sell their share in the Lakers. Everybody else was like, I'm out. And that's why, too, when people talk about, oh, well, Dan Snyder has all this money. He does, but he's miserable because he's watching a team go on without him. Like, Dan Snyder wanted to pass the Redskins down to his kids. Because he idolizes Jerry Jones, you know, and he's just the little brother that we get pushed in the corner at owners' meetings. But he wanted to be able to do the same thing. So, yeah, he's got billions of dollars, sure, but the one thing, like, when it's something that's been your life forever and it's taken away from you, like athletes, when they retire,
well,
and it's like, that's
I thought
it.
A lot of Snyder's issue, too, is like outside of the team, he didn't have a lot of cash. And then you start having to pay taxes on things, and then like the bulk of his money is in the team, and you need liquid assets.
Well, yeah, he's had a lot of failures. He's had a lot of failing businesses, too. He runs them too cheaply. So we've seen that.
Yeah.
As I would know from Red Zebra Broadcasting, my first my start to this business. What a way to get in. You want to talk about getting fed to the wolves. Boy, the stories that I can tell. That'll be for my book one day. But yeah, maybe this will be, maybe they'll make another season of Winning Time on HBO and it'll be all about this. Oh, this is, it was a great show. Honestly, I know you're not a big TV guy. You said you like sports. Watch Winning Time. It's actually a really good show. They cast well, like, they did a really good job with the show. Then there was a Clippers version of the show.
What did you say? Was it on HBO? What service was it?
It was HBO. Yeah. So HBO Max. You can find it there.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Hulu. You get it on there. Yeah, I think it was only one season. It was really just the Showtime Lakers of the 80s, and they kind of just... But they left. I mean, obviously, there's a million more stories to tell, so I hope somebody picks it up and does more with it. So, but now you got more stories to tell, that's for sure. Nick Ashew on the Fan. The Cowboys added another defensive player. They're trying to fix that defense, aren't they? Von Miller signed a one-year deal. You know, Von Miller was actually all right. Here in D.C., right? I mean, what do you have, eight sacks? You can't expect to get that much more from him.
I mean, he
point.
Stepped up when doing stuff he wasn't supposed to, so
I mean,
a good way.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Well, think about how many, honestly, Metal Chris, how many dudes had to step up and play roles that they weren't really here for. Deebo Samuel is another one.
Yep.
Bobby Wagner really was another one, too. They used him too much because they didn't really have a choice. It's just bad all the way around. But, man, if you're Von Miller... You had a choice between the Seahawks and the Commanders, and you chose wrong.
Wrong Washington football team.
Wrong Washington football team, right, exactly. But, no, I mean, I think he's still, here's the thing, guys that are like, great edge rushers that are later in their career, that still have something left in the tank, you can use them in certain situations, right, and they can make a difference. If you think he's getting 40-plus snaps a game, that's probably going to be too much for him, but... I mean, Dallas' defense was a disaster last year. You think the Commanders was bad? So was Dallas. But they've gone out and made some additions this offseason. Again, Von Miller, this isn't prime Von Miller, but, you know, Metal, I think he still adds something to that defense, at least. Maybe a revenge game, too, week two?
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. I can see it already happen. He's coming off the edge. He knows you're not going to have anybody on the left side. No Laremy Tunsil. And he's just going to just go after Jaden Daniels. I can just see it. Ugh. That's the last thing we want. Start this season off with something like that. Just brutal. The NFC's wide open, or the NFC East does still feel wide open. I mean, you'll have an idea the first 2 weeks what, I mean, again, it's first 2 weeks of the season are obviously going to still, teams are still ramping up. It's turned into the preseason at this point, but you're at Philly, you're at Dallas, Eagles have a new offense. I'm interested to see what Sean Mannion does with this because, you know, coming from Green Bay the way that he has, that Matt LaFleur offense was spreading it around to so many different receivers, which I kind of think the Commanders are going to do too. And really, it makes a lot of sense. But you've got that Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, under center, pre-snap motion, wide zone, play action type deal. Like, you know, there's a lot of spreading the ball around. I think the Eagles offense it can go two ways, right? It can look really dysfunctional week one because they're just not ready, or it can just surprise the Commanders because they don't know what to expect, but at the same time, the Commanders also have an offense that has a lot of secrecy to it. So both offenses are kind of secret right now, and they're going to be going up against each other week one. So, you know, it matters having a good offensive coordinator. The one thing is that the Eagles have cycled through them, haven't they? I mean, they really have. Yeah. And it helps when you have Saquon Barkley running for 2,000 yards, but you didn't have that last year, and big difference. And that's the thing. People are like, oh, well, Jalen Hurts needs to... No, Jalen Hurts succeeded when you were running the ball more and when he was running the ball more. Like, they can't be an air-it-out team constantly. It just doesn't... It's just not how he plays. And, yeah, he needs to throw over the middle more, and, yeah, he's going to have to advance as a quarterback a little bit. And, yeah, there was all that stuff that leaked about him as a leader and all this, and, you know, but Kevin Petullo's offense, he was the offensive coordinator there before, and it was pretty stale. They didn't have a lot of creativity there. So I think this Eagles offense is going to look very, very different, and the problem is you just don't know much because there's going to be no real film, and they're probably going to throw some surprises, especially at home to open the season against the Commanders, a division rival, too. And I just don't want to see the Commanders get in a hole. Like, it's a tough schedule. If they can hover around 500 through the first 10 weeks of the season, I mean, really, like, look at the schedule. It's like 10 weeks of legit competition. And I get it. We don't know what everybody looks like and every team is going to be at the time and all that. Like, there are variables that are there. But this team in a prove-it year with rookie offensive and defensive coordinators and all the injuries and all the failures that they had last year, start off the season and struggle against a really tough schedule, it's not going to help them mentally, and that stuff can snowball. And I don't care how much culture you have. I don't care how great of a leader Dan Quinn is. I don't care about any of that stuff because there's only so much you can do if you're 0-3. That's a really tough hole to dig out in the NFL. You're almost guaranteed to not make the playoffs at that point. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be the case. I think they can steal one, but it might be a 1-2 start. I mean, they might beat Philadelphia, lose to Dallas, the other way around, win 1-2 of those division games. Because they're always weird. NFC East games are always strange. They go, they're you know, unpredictable.
That's especially most good divisions, I feel. But
yeah, I mean, that's true. But, I mean, think about this even from the other side of things. If you're looking at Dallas, I mean, we were talking earlier about the secondary for the Commanders, right? Well, what does Dallas have? Two of the best wide receivers in the NFL. And we watched what they did last year. And it was rough. I mean, they threw the ball all over them, and it was just... I mean, the one thing you could say, Dallas has a powerful offense, and it's just... I can see that being a thing. I mean, I can see that week two, and they are just targeting Trey Amos, who's still not ready, you know, coming back from injury and still ramping up. But you got some vets out there at corner, and they're probably going to have to give them more snaps, especially early in the season. But, and there's a lot of surprises that early. I mean, there really are. And again, who knows? Like... Who knows who's going to be dealing with injuries where the Bengals could be decimated by injuries by the time you see them. The 49ers week 6 on Monday Night Football, there's an opportunity there where, you know, you can steal a win because they've got a couple of injuries already. They're older. They didn't do a lot this year. I mean, who knows? Again, we like to play the win-loss game with schedules and everything, but in reality, we know very, very little. I mean, really. Even last year, it was like the Chiefs finally hit a wall. Every year, it was like, well, the Chiefs own the AFC. Always count on the Chiefs. Can't count the Chiefs out. All the Chiefs. And they were 6-8 before Patrick Mahomes even got hurt. I mean, that was a bad season for them. And they did a little bit this offseason. They did have a good defense, too. But, you know, you every once in a while are going to have situations where teams are just going to not be what you expected them to be. I mean, nobody expected the Colts to start 7-1 last season. And you see the Colts week 4, which is also on the road. Like, you're the home team, but you're playing in London. So, you know, it's not an easy, I mean, that's a tough stretch. It's a tough stretch. And it's really, what it's really going to do is test, though, just the culture and the attitude and the mental fortitude, if you will, of this Commanders team, right? Because if you have some adversity early in the season, how do you respond? What does that look like? And they may have to make up some wins on the back end of the schedule. There's a chance. So, I just keep looking at their schedule, man. It's like, how did this happen? How did they get this as the schedule? Also, too, I miss the backloaded division games. Like, what is that this year with the front-loaded ones? Back end is way better. Makes the end of the season that much more exciting.
If it was up to me, all division games would be at the start and end of the season for every team.
Start and end. So, like,
yep, so you play everybody twice, you know, like you normally would, and you play them the first couple of weeks, and you play them the last couple of weeks.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
Then all the middle games is whatever. And, like, that way the – like, I hate – like, last year we had, like, the Eagles, like, twice in 3 weeks or something. It was like,
yeah, I hate that too.
I hate that stuff, man. Like, come on, dude. Like, let's do it. So, like, how are you doing at the beginning of the season? How are you doing at the end? Your teams may be very different in those two meetings, but both those games are going to matter the same, you know?
I think that's a solid plan. I mean, it's, you know, Now it was backloaded for a while, and now it's front loaded a little bit. But yeah, to kind of, I mean, again, some of it I'm sure has to do with.
There's almost playoff implication at the end of the season.
Yeah.
You got to
have the division games at the end of the season, because think about what we got the last game of the year of the regular season was Ravens Steelers. And that was literally for the playoffs.
Well, both those coaches lost their jobs.
Yes. It was a great matchup, a great game, and look at what we got. I mean, you ended up getting a perfect situation for the NFL for the final game of the regular season that had two heated rivals. They hate each other. I mean, it was perfect. So that back-end division matchup is, it's a really big deal. I wish they would stick to that as opposed to this nonsense they gave us this year. But, hey, what are we going to do? The schedule's set, and we're stuck with it, so... Nick Ashew on the Fan.